Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to tournament poker strategy. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Fezbuddy and Killing Bird.
Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. This is Killing Bird. I am here, as always, with Ron Fezbuddy. How are you, bud?
Good, bro. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Just excited to be doing another podcast, yep. And just got back from a little beer tasting event.
So I'm feeling what kind of beer?
A little loose and ready to go. It was a tasting event with six different breweries that have not opened yet in North Carolina, who are sampling some of their sort of test batches. So there was a variety of different kinds of beers, but they were all sort of unique and interesting,
nice.
Just because they were, you know, these brand new small breweries. So yeah, so it was a fun night, but. You know, had a couple beers and now I'm ready to talk some poker.
Very good. Have you been playing lately?
Actually, not a ton. I put in a couple of sessions over the last week. I put them in last Wednesday during the TPE chat. And I think one more on the weekend before that. But that's been about it. Not playing a ton. I played two live cash sessions.
Right.
And that's it over like the last two or three weeks. Right. Been incredibly quiet on the poker front.
Yeah, actually been opposite. I've been playing a lot more lately. I've been on a heater, so it helps, you know.
That always helps for sure.
Yeah, but you know, I think I've been kind of grooving into a schedule. I don't know if it's always been this good or I've been just realizing it's good, but the merge nighttime schedule is actually pretty good for someone who has to work in the day because they have a lot of turbos. That round starting, you know, even though you can late reg an hour. So if you start at like even like 9:30, 10 o'clock, you could pick up a couple of tournaments and then the 10 and the 11s go about two and a half hours. So, you know, if you're, you know, final tabling.
Right.
And so they actually kind of fit nicely. So I've been playing a lot of them and I've been getting really comfortable with the structures more than I've been. Like I've kind of started realizing some stuff since I've been playing more regularly, the structures, how to play these structures have clicked a little bit better.
Right, inflection points and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And just like, honestly, just playing a lot nittier at later stages, you know, because of the stack sizes and, you know, even if I have a – I think there was a thread on the forum about raise folding, like when can you raise fold? And a lot of people are like, well, I would never raise fold, you know, less than 18 big blinds or 16 big blinds. You know, some people were talking about that. And then I chimed in there, like with these merge structures, like you have 12 big blinds – you can actually raise fold 12 big blinds in these structures because,
right.
You know, the average, you know, like I'm talking about like final two, three tables because the average stack size is like 8 big blinds.
Yeah. So sometimes you're like, oh, there's 22 people left. I must be really short. Yeah. And then, you know, cause you have like 12 or 13 bigs and then you look and you're like right in the middle of the pack.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're like 11 of 22 or 13 of 22 or
something
like that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, in those structures, preserving your tournament life has a greater value than, you know, in the deeper stacked structures, you know, just, you know, if you have 18 bigs in a PokerStars final three tables, you're probably one of the shorter stacks, but here you're one of the bigger stacks. And so kind of just it's taken me a while to adjust that because I hadn't been playing regularly on these sites, but since I've been putting in more volume, it's still starting to click. So I've been playing a lot more lately.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I need to get back into it. I find myself going in streaks. Luckily.
Yeah. And I do the same.
Yeah. The Wednesday night TPE chat session we've been doing, which for those who don't know is 7 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday nights, has kind of helped me, at least sort of forced me to play a little bit,
right.
Because I've been trying to participate in all of those, so that's got me to play. And it's also, for better or worse, got me playing less tables because I want to be able to
right.
know, talk to everybody and see how everybody's doing. So I end up, you know, sort of like two tabling or something and then having the chat window. And that's, you know, that's been fun. I think 2 weeks ago I actually won a tournament. It was just like a $5 – I can't remember if it was a $5 tournament or a $5 rebuy.
Right.
But whatever it was not a lot of money. But, you know, nice to take one down. But
yeah, it's always fun.
But, yeah, so if I could just – I guess I just need to add like – two more nights of the week where we chat with
right.
TPE members, and then I'll be forced to play three nights a week, and I'll be back in a schedule again.
Right, right. Have you been watching the World Series?
I'm a little bit behind. I know we're going to talk a little bit about it on tonight's show, but I think I am two episodes behind, so 1 week, I guess, behind. Because
they just play
two-hour-long episodes a night.
Right, right. Yeah, they're – I mean, I just enjoy them so much. I still miss the full, you know, the live – broadcast that they did last year, That was just the nuts, but it's still fun to watch. I still enjoy the 2-hour shows.
Yeah, I think in a way that kind of, as much as I loved, and I guess it was, last year when we were like sitting in the house out in Vegas, like watching on the, you know, actual live stuff of all the other events. It was so amazing, and I was like, this is how poker should be broadcast, but now it's kind of ruined it for me.
Ruined the Tuesday night shows, you mean?
Yeah, because now it's kind of like, now anytime I watch poker, I still enjoy it, don't get me wrong. I mean, I still watch, you know, I DVR every poker show I can and eventually watch it, but it's just, I'm always kind of thinking, God, that was great when it was live and, you know, when they had Olivier Bousquet.
Yeah,
and all those guys.
No, I agree with you on that, except I think that the Tuesday night shows on ESPN, because it's the World Series, they're still very entertaining. Like for like a, you know, a WPT 2-hour, you know, just regular broadcast, those kind of like those I become less interested in those because of what you just said, you know, regarding the live broadcasts are so much richer and more interesting to someone who loves poker. But the drama of the main event is still very interesting. I still would watch both, you know.
Yeah.
Be an advocate for both. And so it affects me, my enjoyment a little bit of the main event Tuesday night broadcast, but there's still so much drama. It's the main event. It's, you know, it's entertainment more than it is poker for me. Although we got some good hands to talk about tonight.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I still love watching it. And, you know, I don't know how to rank it, but it, you know, it's just that if it's a not, if the current way they do it is a 9 out of 10, the live real time thing was like a 15.
Yeah,
out of 10.
I agree. I mean, that was just the best.
For a poker guy, I understand from the casual viewer where they were just like, this doesn't make sense. Like, you know, there were a bunch of guys like us going, this is the greatest thing ever.
Right.
And then there was, you know, Joe Smith in, like, Milwaukee going, why is this on for 8 hours straight? I'm, you know, I can't.
Right.
I don't understand. What's a 3-bet?
Yeah.
So, I get why they maybe went away from that a little bit. But
I do, too. But, you know, and speaking of WSOP, looks like we're having another little get together at the next circuit event, right?
Yeah. So I think it starts the 29th. I know. It must be right. Cause I leave on the 28th. That's the first event. It's the WSOPC at Harrah's in Atlantic City. So, I know I'm going to be up there for like the first, I think 5 days. I think you're going to try to come up if you can.
I'm doing everything I can to come up for I love those early events. They're usually well attended. They're good value. And we're going to have a bunch of TPE pros and members joining. I just have some family commitments that it's just like friends of my wife or do this yearly get together. And if it happens, it falls on that weekend. And if I don't go, my wife will be upset. And
welcome to be a family married guy playing poker.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I drag my wife to all these events. I go, all these things, like, you know, with my work and stuff like that, so, you know, it's her friends doing something, I gotta kind of reciprocate, but it just falls right in line with that weekend. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up. There's that, the Borgata has the fall classic coming, you know, we went to the Poker Open just a couple of weeks ago, and that was so well run, so I want to try, you know, think of trying to get to that. Although the Borgata is having their winter open, they usually have it sometime in January, so I might just hold off until January for my next live, but I'm trying to see if we can not go to this other thing.
Well, you know, obviously if you make it, that's great. Yeah. But regardless, we'll have a bunch of TPE pros. We'll talk to Mark and Casey, see if they're coming in. But I'm pretty sure at least Casey is. I think T-Twist is coming. I'm sure some of the guys who usually go to those events, like, Jamie Kerstetter might be there. Mike Leah, Lee Childs, I'm sure will be there.
Yeah.
So it's always a good time, a fun hang. So stay tuned to the forums if you're going to be going to that and find out where we're going to be. And, of course, you can always follow us on Twitter and stuff like that because we always tweet when we're heading out to the various bars and restaurants and stuff to meet up. So that would be fun.
Yep. Yeah, speaking of Twitter, so, I meant to mention, follow us at Turn Poker Edge for that information. Not Tournament Poker Edge, Turn Poker Edge because there's a character limit. And what do you kill? I just know you're on there. Are you Killing Bird or are you Derek Tenbush? I forget.
At Derek Tenbush.
And I'm at Ron Fezbuddy. And then we tweet out when we're out there. Make sure you follow us and we'll be in touch with all the members who are there when they're there.
For sure.
Cool.
And then I think that'll probably be it for me after after I come back from that, I'm probably going to just chill for a couple months until the circuit event comes to North Carolina.
Yeah,
for the
I'm going to try to come to that, too.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I mean, if there's a soft event on the schedule, it's got to be that one, because there's never been live poker in North Carolina.
Yeah, now all these circuit events are soft, so.
Yeah, no doubt.
They're all high value. If I had the ability to do it, I would play all the circuit events.
Yeah.
They're all soft.
For sure.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of people putting on their man pants.
Yes.
No, that's
gotta check the man pants Twitter account.
Yeah. Call back to the previous podcast.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah. So we'll get into more of this stuff with Casey and Mark, because they're going to join us for our strategy stuff tonight. Going to talk some World Series hands, and then hopefully get to a couple other hands as well.
Yep.
So without further ado, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Mark Aliotto and Casey Jarzabek on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
If you are looking for the best MTG training site on the planet, look no further than TournamentPokerEdge.com. Tournament Poker Edge focuses exclusively on multi-table tournaments and features some of the best live and online pros. No waiting through cash game videos looking for the occasional tournament video. Tournament Poker Edge also offers strategy articles, forums, a member chat room, and much more. So visit TournamentPokerEdge.com and start taking your game to the next level now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. It is that time. Let's bring in Casey Jarzabek and Mark Aliotto.
Welcome back.
Are we recording?
We are recording.
This is great.
We're recording. Your Giants are crushing right now, huh, Mark?
Oh my god, I'm so happy.
Oh yeah, so you're probably watching that game as we're recording this, huh?
I am watching the game, and I'm more of a football guy, so go Niners, but it's nice to see the Giants do something. Pretty incredible what they've done. 6 elimination games, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Cool. Well, it's good right now?
I'd say it's like semi. It's around 2.5.
It's good that they're winning now, because they shit the bet every time we bet on them in Vegas this summer, so.
I don't gamble.
The Giants don't put it together until September anyway.
I've never bet sports in my life.
I don't gamble later.
Yeah.
Although I did pick some guy against Pacquiao and he kicked his ass.
Was that guy's name Bradley that someone had a feeling?
Yeah, I had a feeling.
You guys still owe me some juice on that one, I think.
Biggest fix in the history of boxing. Amen.
And remember that, Casey, too? We tweeted about it. We're like, yeah, KB had a feeling. We both scored it 11-1 in favor of Pacquiao. And then the announcer's like, a new champion. And Casey and I were just like, yes, 500 my way, probably a couple thousand Casey's way. But we don't bet sports.
No. It was play money on PokerStars.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of PokerStars.
Wait, Felt? You mean play money on Felt Stars?
That's what I meant.
Speaking of PokerStars, are you guys ready for Full Tilt? Well, at least Casey, you ready for Full Tilt coming back?
I am. I just my email address I used with them no longer exists, so I just got it all straightened up, got my account verified, sent in all my ID. They told me I'd be ready to go with the opening, with my balance restored, everything in there.
God.
6. Yeah, pretty happy about that.
So jealous.
Yeah, must be nice to be Canadian.
I mean, the truth is, I always did my best work on Full Tilt. I mean, my results are really good on Full Tilt, so I'm pretty happy about it. Plus, I got the personal Big Dog avatar, you dig?
That's right.
You get the
personal avatar. Coming back with, like, the same schedule right away, or are they ramping up slowly? Does anyone know?
I mean, it would be awesome if they came back with the same schedule. I can't fathom it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if they keep the same tournaments and lower the guarantees, that would be perfect with me. Like, I just love their schedule, you know, like that $100 cube that's 7:30, and like just everything was so great on that site. I just loved it.
Including Sundays. Sundays are ridiculous on Full Tilt. You mix up Full Tilt, Lock, and
I think they're going to have still multi entries and everything as well. So, like, I mean, I did well in those things too. So
obviously, I'm not going to ask you how much money you had on Full Tilt, but I did want to ask, did you remember how much you had on Full Tilt? Like, was it a surprise to you when you found out what you had on there?
How do you find out? I still don't know. All I know is they emailed me and said that I had more than the minimum, which I think was, I don't know, $5,000 or something, that you need to verify your account.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just assumed that you had found out by now how much you had on there. But so you don't know. You have no idea. Well, I mean,
I think I know.
Yeah.
I choose not to say it right now, but I think I know, but I don't want to, you know, commit to that because.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't disclose it. I was just curious because I've talked to people who are like, yeah, I think I have some money on there, but I don't really remember because it's been a while.
Yeah, I'd like to log on and find 897 dimes more than I thought I had.
Right.
I know to the decimal what I have on Full Tilt.
Yeah, I took screenshots.
Me too.
I know what I have to the dollar in Absolute Poker.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up because I read an article that Absolute Poker is coming back. Psych! What?
Nah, crushed me there.
That's real cool, Mark.
Sorry.
I know exactly how many Full Tilt points I have on Full Tilt Poker.
Those were worthless anyways. I remember it was like 100,000 by doing it like a $3 Super Turbo 50 man or one place.
I don't know, man. I got a monitor from there. I got an iPod from there.
Yeah, I got like five monitors there from there, and I got the really nice poker table. They do make really nice poker tables. So, I mean, if you actually played, Mark, you might have earned a few points.
Actually, I did. And no, but the truth is you get rake back from Full Tilt. So their FPP system was way less than Stars, but it's just based on the fact that you're getting rake back.
Right.
Maybe you just came up short on points.
Oh.
Maybe I've just been short my whole life and I've had a problem with it, all right?
I actually have that poker table too, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good table. If you're over 448, it's great.
Yeah. Otherwise, you need the much shorter version.
We're going at it tonight, Casey. I love it. Well, Casey, why don't you tell us what you've been up to the last couple weeks? Have you been grinding hard?
I have been doing my fair share of grinding, yep. I'm actually going to grind tomorrow. I got to record a series for a tournament, Poker Edge, so I'm going to play tomorrow. I'm going to put in a session tomorrow.
Nice. I think me and Mark are going to put in one tonight.
Doubt it.
With Peronis and pumpkin brewed ale?
Yeah.
Oh, the reason why I asked Casey, too, is that I actually enjoy watching your videos. And people will say, like, oh, you're on Casey's dick, man. Do you give him hand jobs on the podcast? But the
not
truth
on
is-
the podcast, you know.
No, not on the podcast. That's just in Vegas. But the fact is Casey's been a huge influence on my poker career, so I do enjoy watching his videos. And
I bet you I final table something tomorrow. You want to have a prop bet?
No way. I will never bet against the big dog.
Later.
Unless you want to bet Michael Bradley against Manny Pacquiao.
Definitely do.
Never bet against Casey unless it's in Golden Tee, in which case you'll win, like I did. Later. Also going on in the poker world right now is the World Series of Poker. Have you guys been watching that?
Yeah, I love ESPN shows. I'm addicted.
I can't
to
get enough of it. No, I haven't been watching.
I love it too. I mean, especially down to like five to four tables, you get all the sickos, including fellow lock pro Paul Volpe. What did he take? 20th or something?
Yeah,
somewhere around there.
Did you guys see that hand last night with Ace King versus Ace King and the guy?
Greg Mercian?
No, from.
It was a Canadian.
It was La Ducière or something like that.
Yeah, from Canada, and
the
then,
that, oh yeah. La Ducière.
The guy that Norman Chad is obsessed with.
Yeah, he's like, oh my god, this guy's.
It's actually
so
a little disturbing at this point how much he's talking about how good he looks. It's actually getting a little disturbing. But how do you say it, Mark?
The Canadian guy.
The Canadian guy. And oh god, the other guy's name is even harder. Karanakoy or something.
Hardukent? No, yeah, the Turkish guy.
Karaknai. Karaknai. Andres Karaknai.
It's Pierogi.
Pierogi.
I mean, imagine what equity that pot is. I mean, that was like a 20 million chip pot.
Yeah, no,
that's got up to like 3 million in equity or something.
Yeah, the blinds were at what, at 125, 250 or 100, 200 at the time. I can't remember, but it was like
but it was an 18 million chip pot, I think.
18 million chip at 18 million chip at 100, 200,000. They were, you know, Karaknai was 9 million deep and they got it all in preflop ace king.
You know what? This brings up a great topic that I want to jump into already. Is remember when Karaknai, the lady from France who ended up bubbling,
Bauman, yeah.
She opened and he jammed, like not seeing that she opened.
Yeah.
And do you guys remember the ruling on this? He jammed, like I think she opened. This was like blinds were way low.
It's like
D4.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they let him muck his hand. I would have lifted the fucking table up, thrown it over my 4'2" head, and punched every floor man there. It was the most ridiculous ruling ever.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's terrible.
She
ruling.
Said he was all opens, in. Yeah.
She opens and he declares all in.
Yeah.
Well,
and
we're
then,
and the guy goes, "I remember the floor man," and I think they called Matt Savage too, or whoever.
No, they
the
call Matt Savage. Man. They called Jack Effel.
Jack Effel.
Yeah.
My bad. And so he ruled it too, like, no, we're going to allow him to keep his tournament life and only cost him
right.
60,000 in chips.
But let's give the specific of the position, because I think she was under the gun. She opened. He was like on the button, and he jammed all in. And then the small blind and big blind just folded, and he didn't know that she was under the gun opening. So when he saw that –
And then he mucked.
When he saw the big blind fold – he's like, all right, I got, you know, everyone folded. He mucks his hand. He starts going for the chips. And then they're like, no, Bauman's still in it.
Bauman.
So then they're like, well, he has no cards, so he can't be all in, and we're just going to give you his 60,000 as if he just limped. Like, not even give him a raise, like make him raise and fold. They just let him, like, limp and fold.
Dude, even if they said, like, okay, you make it 3X her open – and you keep your stock, I would have literally punched every floorman and dealer on the floor. I'm not even kidding. I would have erupted. Huh?
I know. It's so awful. I didn't understand why they were protecting him from his mistake as opposed to her from his mistake.
Right.
I mean, it sucks.
She didn't put up any fight, though.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she just, like, rolled her eyes. I'm like, roll your eyes, punch the dealer, like... Yeah. The truth is, like, you're talking and the funny thing is look, he ends up knocking her out to bubble the final table.
I know.
She shoved ace nine with, like, I think 16 big blinds, and he woke up in the small blind with ace jack and called and faded. And she got in 10th, and he gets all the glory in 9th. And the motherfucker should have been out in, like, 970.
He's second going into the front. God, that guy is in her nightmares, man.
Dude, oh yeah. when it happened, the last hand, like the look on her face was priceless. It was like fuck my fucking life. Yeah. I mean, the fact is like the World Series, they shouldn't have even shown that hand on ESPN because it makes the poker world look horrendous that they would allow that to go down. Like, the dude is clearly all in.
So what do you think they should do? They should just run.
I mean, it's clear to me.
Run it all in with no cards?
If she has him covered, it's good game later.
Right. But run it all in with no cards? Just like, you know, because if a straight comes up, then they're tied or whatever. Just run it all in.
Yeah, exactly. Run it out. If there's like five diamonds and she doesn't have a diamond, chop it up or whatever. If there's a five card straight,
right,
chop it up. But the fact is, like, it's not her fault. Why is she being penalized when some dolt doesn't, you know, shoves his chips in and throws his hand in the muck? And she has kings.
Right.
And it opens the door for huge angle shooting, too, because then all you have to do is say, I'm all in. And if they don't all fold, then you just muck your hand and say, I didn't realize.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to start reshipping, throwing my hand in the muck. Like, when I know the guy's about to call, like, I'll look at his face and be like, oh, shit, he's calling. I'm going to ship my shit into the fucking muck and get all my chips back. Seems fair, right?
And all you have to do is call.
And now the guy's second in chips for fucking, like...
Well, he's so lucky. So getting back to the hand I was talking about, he had ace-king versus ace-king, and he hits a four-card flush for an 18 million chip pot at 100-200. and the other guy is just devastated. Like, and that guy was playing really well too.
Yeah, the Canadian was probably top four players left, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Greg Merson is by far the best player left.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, but it's a good final table. I mean, everyone seems. Everyone seems pretty skilled, for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm happy I brought that hand up, not to give myself a pat on the back, but. I didn't even see much about it on Twitter or anything. That hand actually made me...
There was a lot about it when it happened. I mean, it was just... Actually, when it happened, it was there was a lot of noise about it, believe it or not.
I mean, why hasn't the rule already been changed now?
Yeah, like, I know.
Why do you got to say mother trucker and all this stuff?
Casey, I know you have a son now, and I know, like, I do want to apologize to you. No, but seriously, Casey, let's pretend that's you. You open under the gun... With kings. And,
yeah, I would have tooled out hard. I would have called every floor guy in the world. I would have been like, what are you talking about? He said all in. He declared all in. That's binding. That's it. End of story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was for
so you would have flipped out.
A hardcore.
And they called Jack Effel, and Jack Effel came up with that ruling. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was explained to him properly because
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
Like, how do you possibly come up with that ruling?
You know, I know sometimes when these controversial calls come up, like, they'll ask Matt Savage what he would have done in that situation. Do you know if that question has been asked to him? I assume it has been somewhere.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. I think I'm sure he was asked on Twitter or something, but that was, you know, when it happened, I think he was asked about it
right.
a long time ago.
Although he might stay away from questioning other, like, Jack Heffel in particular, but I don't know. It was a horrible call regardless.
If Bowman throws a fit, is the ruling changed?
I mean, you can get another opinion.
I mean, I feel like if Bowman stands up and go, wait, I have pocket king. Like, it doesn't even matter what she has, but if she says, like, wait, you're saying I open, this guy shoves all in, mucks his cards, he gets all his chips back but 60K. And I don't even get to play my hand, and he's all in. Like, she opened, he shoved. Like, how is that ruling ever fair?
It's 100% his mistake, right? So
yeah. But I mean, got penalized, right?
Should have been good game.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Plus, he might have caused other people to fold who would have played if he hadn't gone all in.
Yeah, someone made 3-bet her, and then, like, 4-bet
her.
Yeah,
she was probably going to get 3-bet with an under-the-gun raise. Being the
title, whatever. I'm saying, you know, it could happen. Like,
doubt it.
Some guy may have folded eights that would have flatted, and then it comes king 8-4, and it's good game for him. I mean, it's the worst ruling ever. And this poor girl that played really good, actually, except for the sixes hand that we'll talk about later. She ends up bubbling the final table, and our Turkish friend, who, you know, no disrespect to him, he should have been out, but he's now second in chips. Yeah. Like, it seems like a really fair game, and, like,
well,
we're pushing regulation and shit.
Well, you brought up that sixes hand, Mark. Why don't we go over that really quick?
Yeah, we may as well throw that into the mix. Okay, so Gail Bauman? I apologize. The beautiful French lady, blonde, is in this. They are 10-handed now on the bubble, and she's open ripping a lot of hands, but... So this hand comes out where it's folded to Greg Merson, who I believe is 1-2 in chips, and he opens the button, I think min 550, like min plus 50K, with hella chips behind. And she's in the small blind, I believe with 16 to 20, doesn't really matter, with pocket six.
Oh, it does matter.
No, it doesn't, because I'm ripping 55. I think she had 16. Don't quote me on it. It's between 15 and 20. And she folds sixes. You guys go ahead and tell me what you think about that play. Button opens, folded to the button, opens. The Agus guy, doesn't even matter who he is, like, opens the button, the min plus 50K, and she has sixes in the small blind with 16 to 20 big ones. Go ahead.
I mean, it's just a rip. I mean, I know it's the final table bubble, but it's a guy on the button. And he's an aggressive player at that, and she's got under 20 big blinds. I mean, and I've been playing much nittier with trying to reduce variance, but that just seems like an easy shove to me.
That's Stuffy Baker.
Yeah.
Seems like the only way it's not maybe a riff is if there's like some guy with a half a big blind,
right? Yeah.
Sitting at the table, and you can make the November or the October 9 by folding, like, because there is some there.
To me.
Well, it probably still might be, but I guess I guess you could maybe find. I could find a little more justification because you're gonna make you're gonna make some money off of just making the October 9.
So funny you bring that up, KB, because I was in a spot yesterday on a tournament on Lock where I had sevens with 10 big blinds folded to one in middle position with sevens and 10 bigs. And a guy had one big blind, and we were on the money bubble. And I sat there with sevens, and I was like, wow. ICM
I could really use this 42.50.
This is what happened. It went through my head. I said, ICM says fold, but Casey wouldn't be my friend if I didn't shove. So I shoved. Because I thought it was friendship. And I got called by Queens, and then I called Casey and said, thank you, asshole. But, I mean, I hear you with one big blind. But even then, like, we're playing chip EV. Like, that amount of chips she will gain from reshoving, even if a guy has one or two big blinds, like.
He's folding so much there.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous how much he's folding. He's opening so wide, especially given how tight she's playing. And that is the bubble. It's like he's opening a ton there and folding a ton there in a $10 tournament on Merge, let alone the final table bubble with a tight player who's trying to creep into the final table. He's opening like 99% there.
And what I should include, too, is that the chip leader was in the big blind. Sylvia was in the big blind. So I think that gives him a range of peanut butter, Snickers bar, and Babe Ruth. I don't think he needs cards to open there.
Well, why do you say that with Sylvia in the small blind? Why does that make it more likely? I think that would make it less likely. Not that I really think it impacts it.
Yeah,
much,
well, I think Sylvia could 3-bet likely, but
right.
I think a lot of times, especially on the final table of the dub sop, like depending on who it is, and Sylvia is definitely really good at poker.
Sylvia should be 3-betting him super light, honestly.
Yeah. But I still think, regardless of that, I still think what do you call him, Casey? Mercier? Greg Mercier? I still think he's opening pretty wide from the button.
I agree.
Enough where sixes is a shove.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
like,
it's probably a good 4-bet spot for him. Because I would expect Sylvia to be 3-betting a ton. And then, shit, man, he should be 4-betting. And then Sylvia's probably 5-betting, you know, given those dynamics a ton. I expect that to be quite often.
Why I said any two with the big stack, I'm more likely to open any two into the bigger stacks or medium stacks because I feel like shorter stacks are push or fold. Like, the guys, like, she has to push or fold there, obviously. She can't flat. So, like, into the big stack, I feel like he's either going to flat or fold, and I feel like he's not a reship stack. So, like, I'm going to open wider into those stacks, just how I play. But, yeah, the button's any two anyway with him, especially with, like, I think he had over 100 big blinds. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I think a fold there is really a big mistake by her.
Yeah, I mean, a huge mistake. But she did play really well up to that point.
Yeah,
that was the only hand I saw her play bad.
And speaking of Karaknai, didn't you say there was another big hand? I actually didn't see the second hour yet. I'm going to watch that probably tonight after the podcast. But there was a big hand between him and Hillet.
Yeah. Okay. So it's folded to the small blind with Karaknai, who has, I think, a medium stack at this point because he won the ace-king hand. So I don't know his exact stack, but he has over 40 big blinds. And the small blind has...
What are the blinds at this time? Are there 125, 250?
250 big blinds.
Yep.
And... the lady from Norway, Millie?
Hillet.
Sorry.
You've watched 25 hours of this so far.
No. I literally, like, I rewatch it, too, just to make sure I'm on my shit. Anyways, he opens to 550 with queen-jack offsuit, folded two in the small blind, and she has 10-7 of clubs with 30 big blinds to start the hand.
Mm-hmm.
She flats, which I think is standard. I don't hate a 3-bet, actually, because she can't 3-bet fold, but I like a flat. Like, you know, it's barely min to her, so I think flat's
fine. How many blinds does she have?
30.
Okay, yeah.
Wait, you think it's a fold?
No. I thought she had 20 to start the hand. I wouldn't really 3-bet fold, but if she had 30.
But you'll 3-bet fold 30.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen you 3-bet fold 6.
Especially if her name is Millie.
I'm sorry, you know. Anyway, so she flats, and the flop comes 5-6.
Well, why don't you think she? Why doesn't she 3-bet there? 3-bet fold there? You think? I mean, it's 10-7 hands a good hand. It's a good hand disguised if you hit the flop. She could probably.
Yeah,
flop a lot.
I agree.
That's why I would flat.
I just don't think she got there by doing a lot of 3-betting those kind of hands.
Yeah.
I mean, she's in position is why I don't hate a 3-bet. It's a very good hand that kind
he's in a small up. Blind. Okay, yeah. That's great. That's a great spot to flat. I agree. I think flatting is good there.
I think she has a lot of post-flop value with 10-7.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
So it comes 5-6-8, and
pretty good flop for Millie.
I mean, it's a very good flop for her. Now, he c-bets. I don't know the exact sizing, and I apologize. But he c-bets. And remember, she's starting the hand with 30 big blinds, so now she has 28, 27 and a half. So he c-bets, and she decides to just
flop. 25K, he c-bet.
Okay, so now what's your feeling on that, Casey? You're defending 10-7 of clubs in the big blind. The small blind c-bets 5-6-8, and you have 10-7 of clubs, like I said, with 28 big blinds. What's your line?
Well, I mean, probably first thing I do is pull my ID out. And if I see my last name is Hilly, then I might flat or rip. If I look and my last name is Millie, I definitely rip.
I don't even know what that means.
Am I really going to get shit for missing their names?
And what if your name is Jarzabek? Then what do you do?
If my name is Jarzabek, I can't imagine me not just ripping this flop after he leads. I mean, what else was I hoping to hit when I defend like that? I have open-ender.
To the nut, too.
And it's a board that probably, I mean, he's not going to connect with that often. So, yeah, I'm just going to rip it.
Why wouldn't he connect? It's 5-6-8 from a small blind to open. I think, you know, there's a good chance he has that hits him as well.
Okay, what if he has something like queen-6?
Right. I mean, yes, I agree. It's not.
Yeah, and then you're getting it in with overs and a straight draw. I mean, it crushes.
Like, I mean, to the point, he's not going to connect to the point where he's going to call my shove.
Right, unless he's hit exactly an 8, like ace-8 or something, he's probably folding.
But when he does, you know, it's main event, 11 people left, you're taking a super high variance line.
If he has an ace-8, I'm not a huge dog, as I now have 3-10s, and I have my open-ender. So,
yeah, over an open-ended is like a 46%, whatever, it's not that bad.
No, I'm not a huge dog if he hit the 8. Like,
and that's a big if. Is it big or is it huge, Casey? It's huge.
Huge. Especially
my point is why not take this line with 28 big blinds? Let's look like we have the nuts now, because remember, 5-6-8, 2 hearts. So like a lot of times if he just c-bets and she rips, he can be like, okay, she's on a 7, she has a flush draw. You can kind of range better. But why not, you know, he makes it 1.175 million now that I'm looking at the hand.
Yeah.
That is on the turn. Floppy
on
makes
the floppy he put 625. I'm not gonna raise fold on the flop. I'm not just gonna raise here and then fold my hand, so I'm just gonna put in all my equity.
Yeah, but the thing is like why not make it like she starts the hand with like 7 million. Why not make it 2.3 million or something really big where you let
I'm going to explain why I don't make it 2.3 million is because what if the guy's just a tool and he thinks that I'm on a move and he rips queen jack and I'm not folding and he holds.
He's not going to rip queen jack in this spot ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
He's not ripping queen jack in this spot.
0%
I agree
of
with
the
that.
Time he's doing that. 0%.
I don't know about that.
She's putting in 1/3 of her stack. Like it shows that. Like, listen, motherfucker, I'm not folding.
But if you're not folding, why not just put it all in and eliminate the 1% chance that he
this
rips?
Is why? Because it's a 5-6-8 board with 2 hearts. Like, if I see bet there and someone just rips in my head, if I have a 6, I may not find a fold because I'm gonna think about it and be like, wow, there's way too many draws here. Like a 6 could be good, but make it like 1.7, 2.2 million? Like, now you're like, what the fuck? Did she flop the nuts? Does she have
There's no way that he's calling her. with a six.
If she just shoves?
Yeah, I agree with that. Not in this spot. Not in this spot, given the equity.
Maybe not in this spot, but let's think about regular MTGs.
But like, that's not what we're talking about right now.
What's up?
That's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about the main event.
It's totally different.
Hey, Casey, but if you're playing the main event, you're going to play it like any other tournament. You're going to play it like a regular tournament.
No, I'm going to rip here. I'm not trying to induce with 10-7 of clubs on that flop.
Neither am I. Who's trying to induce?
But Mark.
Well, here's the thing, though, Mark, is against me, people take crazy lines. And if I make it some crazy where a third of my stack, some people can still think I'm full of it and rip complete error on me.
Well, then those guys don't make money playing poker.
Well, that's
like I'm not inducing with one third my stack, and nobody else is in the world. That's not
Mark,
inducing.
You can't take the main event out of this equation because this hand's not even worth talking about if it's not the main event. The only reason this is we're talking about is the equity that the variance that she introduces by shoving. Is that worth it at this stage of this tournament? That's the only reason why this hand is interesting, which is – so, you can't take that out of it. It's too important.
My point is I'm not inducing when I make a $2.2 million. I'm letting the dude
know. I know you're not folding. I know you're not inducing, but if you don't think that there's some sickos out there that make it look like they're inducing with complete error here and making it $2.5 million, you're crazy.
No. I'm not saying there's a lot of I understand.
No, but I'm just saying.
Plenty
so
of chicks
have
to do that with air. But I'm just doubting that he's gonna shove Queen Jack because.
But
saying, against me, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody decided to Mick Ripplesteinberger here with Queen Jack on me when I raise.
Yeah, but that's you. I mean, we were looking
at what I would do.
Yeah, but we're looking at a situation against Korchnoi, who's like been fairly tight, and Elizabeth Healy, I just don't think he's gonna make a play with like ace four here or something like that.
Obviously the dynamics are a little different when it's Millie against Korchnoi.
Yeah, and not Tarzabek versus Alioto.
Mark, if he has like ace four of hearts, and being that there's two hearts on the board, if you make it 2.5 or whatever you said, watching him play, he's the kind of guy who will call to see if a heart hits on the
may call. You're right.
But is it calling a rip?
You're like ranging him on a really small sample. You're ranging him on a really tight range there.
What if he has Queen Jack of hearts?
I mean, then it sucks. Then fuck your life. I mean, like, the point is like, all I'm saying is that raising looks way stronger than shoving.
No, like, but I'm just saying, like, yeah. Karak and I here might fold Queen
Jack. He's going to rip. Oh, if you shove? No way. No way.
I mean, you don't ever for one second think that maybe she has the nut flush draw?
Wait. This is blind versus blind. You mean to tell me if he c-bets 625 and she shoves, he's going to fold Queen Jack of hearts, which is potentially two overs and a flush draw? 0%.
I haven't watched any of the coverage,
my bank account number. I'll put my whole roll that he never folds it.
I haven't watched any of the coverage. I don't know how the guy plays, but I'm saying Diego says he plays a little weird, so maybe he does fold.
I just think there's no way he's folding.
Now, Casey, let me ask you this. How do you feel about calling the flop and then folding if you don't hit on the turn? Because what happens next is that the turn is a blank. I think it's the two of spades.
Well, I can tell you that the one thing I definitely don't do is call.
Call and then give up later.
And then give up. I mean, she's giving away $1.2 million more again.
No. She's giving away 625, not 1.2. I'm talking about giving up.
But he calls
the
turn.
No, I'm talking about, on the turn, how do you feel about what I'm saying is on the calling the flop and seeing a turn card but giving up on the turn if you don't hit?
I guess it's if that's the way you want to play, it's fine. But personally, I don't like putting in equity when my hand flops so good and then just giving up on the hand. Like once I decide that I like this flop and my hand's pretty good, I'm probably going to go to war with it.
Yeah, because you want to put pressure on the opponent.
I'm never taking this conservative road.
I want to be very clear on one thing with just me. Sorry to interrupt, Casey, but I do want to be very clear. I do not hate a rip at all. I think a rip is totally – I prefer a rip to a flat on the flop. I'm just saying to look even nuttier, I think a smaller raise, like not an inducing raise, but like a smaller raise where you're not shoving, really looks nuttier. And like I know it does. I don't think it does. I know it does.
I agree that it looks nutty. I agree.
My point is I just want to be clear that I do not hate a rip. And flatting is like, it's really not, I don't know. I don't like a flat on the flop because I think if you're defending 10-7 of clubs, like, and you flop this gin of a hand, which, yeah, it does connect to his range, but you're really not dogged it too much if you have an over and an open ending.
Right. That's why, like, I think you're right there because you do have so many outs.
Yeah, but okay, so say flat. I mean, go where you're going, Diego. So we do flat. The turn's a deuce of spades, and he fires out 1.2 mil. And she has, what, 5.8 left?
Around that, yeah.
5.8 with 3 million in the pot. I mean, it seems like a clear rip to me if we flat.
Yeah, I mean, if my name's Millie, I'm putting in 5.8 milli here.
Yeah. She has fold equity. She has outs, like, I mean.
And a shove on either street is going to work for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm not trying to argue. Like, I think a shove is totally fine on the flop. I just think, like, let's try to take the best line possible and, like, just put yourself in his shoes if he has, like, a 6 or a 5 and, like, or even an 8. Like, what if you have queen 8?
My shoes is if, like, honestly, if I always expect – you've seen me play and you're like –
Oh, I mean, 10 high, good in your shoes.
No, but I'm like, you've seen me play and you're just like, wow, that guy just gifted you the whole stack by doing something when he was drawing dead. And I just always eliminate that option when the guy could do something stupid. And my hand, the best I'm probably doing is flipping.
Yeah,
so I just take all my fold equity and use it.
No, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I have seen – you definitely get treated differently than any other player I've ever seen online for a good reason. I mean, you are super ag. But we're looking at it based on situation and, like, based on who's who. She's been really active. He's been relatively nitty. I think a shove looks way, way, way lighter than, like, a raise that's not inducing. And, like, I'm not really looking at sizing because I'm not looking at exact stacks and annies and stuff like that. But I'm saying, like, I like on the flop a bigger bet where it lets the guy know, like, I'm not folding, but – you know, like, guess what I have now when I make it this amount. Whereas opposed, if you're shoving, I mean, like, let's look at it. When you play online poker, everyone here, when someone just rips an absurd amount of big blinds or re-rips a flop on, like, two hearts, whatever, like, a lot of times they're going to have a flush draw. Like, you know. Or
yeah,
like,
but I think how big a shove is, like, this is the kind of guy who will call. And from what I've seen, I think he'll make a lot of weird just calls here with of 2 million and then put you in weird spots in the turn if you don't hit that you're going to have to shove and, you know, and then you might get scared.
Well,
and back
and
out.
That's why I said I think you make it bigger. Where, like, if he's paying attention – dude, this guy won the LAPC. Like, this guy is no scrub.
No, I know that. I know that.
I agree with you. But that's why you make it big. Like, maybe even bigger than 2 – maybe, like, 2.6 million, like – let him know you are not raised folding.
I put in 6 million Hilly.
I mean, it's so easy to say when we see his hands, when we see what he has, but I'm just saying what line I would take based on this board.
I don't even remember. What did he have? I don't remember.
He had queen high, queen jack high. Like, it's really easy to say, like, oh, raise it every time. But the fact is, if we're defending 10-7 with 30 big blinds and we flop open-ended of the nut with, like, I mean, we're just guessing one over and open-ended, but more than likely we can have two overs or he has air. I mean, it's a very connected board, but I think she needs to reapply pressure.
You know,
I think it's just main event. Like, people are, you know, tighter than they should be.
I want to go
what
back to
the
flop. What
is the big line at this point?
They were
250.
Yeah, 250K. And they were like 7.5K deep, I think. 7.5 million deep.
He had 7.5 mil effective.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm shoving this flop.
Yeah, and I'm totally fine with that.
And like, I know his hand, but even if you, like, even if I didn't know his hand, I'm shoving this flop when I'm defending there. And, you know, I'm not trying to call and then have him lead some ridiculous amount or shove into me on the turn. What if I just call and he just rips the turn? Then my whole game is out. I'm just ripping this flop.
You've given your equity up.
That is the best explanation so far.
Right.
Like,
and I want to go back to that for a second because I think Casey talked about wanting to preserve his equity by shoving here. So what, like, you know, what I want to get a quick equity estimation here because I got Poker Stove open. What do we think? I mean, he's a small blind. Is he opening any two here or top 90%? I mean, it's probably a super wide range, but like.
I mean, she's a woman. Has she been tight?
No,
it's not at all.
She's really aggressive.
Yeah, she's aggressive.
She's really good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd still say his range is fairly huge.
Yeah, it's like almost anything. I mean, it's
right.
Know, got like 3-2 off maybe, you know, but not much more than that. I'll give
it. I mean, I raised 3-2
like,
off there.
At this point, you're like 2 away from the final table, so you really should be opening any 2.
Yeah, I'm just going to give him 100%.
I was going to say, I think it is any 2.
It is any 2. And she's 10-7 off or 10-7 suited. I can't remember.
Suited, I believe. I think it was clubs. Well, I can see the hand, right?
Yeah, 10-7.
No, it doesn't say her hand. I'm pretty sure it was 10-7 of clubs.
All right. So her equity on the flop is she's actually a favorite against a random.
Oh, of course. She's got to be a huge favorite.
That doesn't include if you know him folding. So wait. Okay, so let's give her equity if he calls. What hands does he call here with on the flop?
If she shoves?
Yeah.
He probably calls with most hard draws. He probably calls with any overpair and a lot of eights. I don't think he calls a 6 or a 5 ever.
I don't think he calls with a 5 ever, and I'm doubting he calls with a 6. I think there's a small percentage he calls with a 6, but I doubt it in this spot. And, like, an 8, like, I don't think he's calling with any 8, unless it's, like, 8-7.
Think he's going to call with most 8s just because there's probably a fairly good percentage of the time that she's on hearts or a 7.
Yeah. I mean, it's a... Yeah, it's not.
Like, I'm probably calling with most 8s in his shoes if somebody.
I'm calling with every 8 in his shoes. I just don't.
Yeah,
I mean.
That's what I'm saying. If somebody stuffy Baker's there, I'm probably calling with any 8.
But, Casey, this is my thing, and, like, this is, like, one thing you have taught me, not to bring it back to that you taught me everything, but the truth is that I'm going to play this tournament like any other tournament. And I know that's sick to say, and I can say it right now, but, like.
Well,
really
I'm going to play it like any other tournament, too. That's why I'm calling with any 8.
Yeah, me too, because I want to play the same way in any tournament, regardless if it's a $5 freeze out or a 5K, because I want to play the same way. I want to play good, solid poker.
Yeah, I agree. That's
what
I'm saying.
Even if the big ice, you know.
Yeah, against most of that calling range, it's hard to really narrow down the calling range because so many hands to put in there, but against, you know, all overpairs, sets, most eights, all flush, even if all flush draws call. She's still got 42% equity, you know, and that's of the times
he has an 8.
Yeah. Well, an 8 or a set or, you know, a big flush draw.
Well,
yeah.
Let me ask you guys this, and I would appreciate everyone to answer. Everyone here plays poker. Does a raise look stronger?
Yes, it looks stronger.
And a shove.
A raise looks stronger. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Although it opens up the option of people tooling.
Yes.
No, but that's why you make it bigger.
I know, but that you're assuming that everybody realizes by making it bigger, he doesn't have fold equity. A lot of people don't realize they don't have fold equity when they do certain things.
Yeah, exactly.
This guy won the LAPC main event for $700,000.
Okay, like I say, I don't have any dynamics on either Karuk and I or Hillary. So I don't know. I'm just saying, in general, that I'm probably just ripping here, not having any factors on the players.
And Mark, what do you do if he makes that you make a $2.5 million, and he rips on you?
If you make a $2.5 million and he calls and then rips the turn?
then I'm throwing up in my mouth.
Yeah, and you're putting yourself in that situation too many.
But not,
I think that actually.
But I mean, that's like $5 freeze out play. That's
I gotta be honest, Mark. If the guy has won the LAPC and he's confident and you know this about him, then yeah, the raise is absolutely fine. You're effectively doing the same thing. But I don't know who this.
Wait. Effectively doing the same thing, but admit that it looks stronger.
I said that from the beginning.
I know, but I just want to be clear now that I just trying to be right.
I just really want to be right.
No, you're right.
If he does flat my raise, I'm puking and being like, you're a fucking fish. I mean, I'd be really heated if he just calls my raise. But if he just calls my raise, I'm putting him on like the nuts, basically. Like,
what if he calls your raise and you have 3.8 million left behind, and on the river he leads 3.5 mil?
I know. I mean,
flat.
I'm throwing up, but I'm not expecting that in this spot. Like, I'll expect that against certain guys, but there's certain guys where I would just rip here, and then there's Andras Korognaki from Turkey, where I'm just raising to look even stronger. But
God,
yeah,
I really hope this guy doesn't. I hope this guy doesn't win the main event, because nobody can say his name. He's gonna be a pain in the ass if he wins.
I guess my only point is that if, you know, let's say there's only a 5% chance that, like, he tools out like Casey's saying he could do. Why even risk that 5% if your goal is to get him to fold anyway?
Well,
like,
just
if your goal
is to get him to fold. Mark thinks that there's an equal amount of equity in making your hand look 5% stronger by raising instead of shoving.
I guess that, yeah. And, I guess
and that is my point, but I'm not saying it's right, but...
No, I understand. Believe me, Mark, I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, I'm just not sure I would want to look Korokonokanai in the eye and not just shove
in. No, this is funny. This is funny because on anything I could swear on, I would never raise here. I would always shove. Me playing. The only reason why I bring it up is because I think it's a much stronger line than just shoving.
Yeah, and you're a little bit heated because they wouldn't let you on the roller coaster today.
No, because I went to the county fair today, and fucking I couldn't get on the zipper. No, but it's important for me, like... as I'm trying to get better, I like to look at better lines, and like I think I would always ship here with 10-7 if I flatted. I would just always ship the flop when the guy c-bet. I would just ship. But I'm kind of starting to look into these other lines where I think if we make it half our stack or something absurd, even if we make it 5.5 million with 1.7 behind, I don't know. I think that looks stronger than just all in. Just my opinion.
Good start.
And yes, I did not get on the zipper today. Fucking died. Great hand, though. I'm happy we brought it up.
Yeah,
I couldn't get on the zipper, so I went bungee jumping off my picnic table. Later.
No, Casey. You have to be 5'7" to bungee jump. No, wait. True story. Let's be real here. So when I showed up in Vegas, Casey and KB were the first two there, and I showed up, and they're like, wow, Mark. You're actually taller than we expected. True or false?
Well, yeah, because we thought you came from...
True or false?
Because they thought you were a thimble. That's why.
As much as I hate to admit it, that is true.
Well, true, yeah, because when we first got there, we were tiptoeing around the host because we thought you were walking around and we just couldn't see you.
Mark was disappointingly tall.
His wife beaters made him look taller.
That might be true. And he did wear those, like, tall, like, tennis shoes, like Jordans or something.
No, I'll never forget Danny. He goes, like, bro, why do you wear those baggy shorts? You realize it makes you look like a midget. And I'm like, bro, I'm already known as a fucking midget. What do I have to lose?
No, Danny, they don't. These make me look tall.
No. The thing is, and what I told him was, I was like, dude, they don't make shorts for fat people. If you want to buy your size as a fat person... Your fucking shorts are like barely.
I remember that conversation. And then you said, and if you don't believe me, ask Casey.
No, yes, I said that too. Casey, you're always my scapegoat. I'm like, and Casey, you agree. Because you wear a belt with pairs of shorts because you know that they do not compensate us big bone people.
Later.
The funny thing is, they weren't actually shorts. They were pants for a kid.
No, they were
shorts.
Shorts.
So, Mark, who do you think's the favorite going into the final table now? You know, it's Sylvia with a ton of chips.
After watching that, I mean, like, I don't dissect it, but I do watch. I think Greg Merson is by far the best player. I think if Latisor would have faded ace-king, I think he would have been a nice favorite. But now, just with what they are, I really like Merson, and I like the guy... the cash game vet in Vegas, Salaburu.
Yep.
What's his name?
Salaburu.
Is it Salaburu?
Salaburu.
See, this just shows the audience that we don't research when we talk on podcasts. This is all fucking, like, off top of the head shit.
I'm personally pulling for Merson because he has the same agent as me. So. Yeah.
Ah, there we go.
He won the six max event, which doesn't mean really much. I mean, I think the guy.
That's huge. Of course, that means a lot. It's a six max 10K. It's like one of the hottest tournaments of the whole summer.
Well, it means a lot, but I mean, a lot of people can. Well, I guess you can't luck box that tournament. I think he's really good. Like, his queen fall was ridiculous, which is another hand we could bring up. Like, I mean, do we want to talk about that?
Yeah, talk about it.
Okay,
let's talk about a hand with Salabulu.
So, he was at Paul G's table.
There was another interesting hand, 10-handed. This is actually a super interesting hand given all the table dynamic. And Russell Thomas, who had he finished his fourth in chips, so I guess he had a decent amount of chips at that point. He raised – we are at 150, 300, and he makes it 750 from under the gun. Under the gun plus one, Balsinger calls, and then it folds to Merson. I'm not sure what he was pretty late position. Was he like in the cutoff or the hijack mark? Do you remember?
Yeah, he was in position, so cutoff hijack button.
Yeah, cutoff hijack. And so he it goes 750 to Merson, who makes it 1.85 million with queens. So obviously pretty strong hand here, although he is raising the under the gun,
I would make it bigger, but I really do like his sizing given the dynamic of the final table.
What do you mean by that? What's the dynamic?
I would make it a little bigger in this spot just because I'm not looking to get flatted. Like, right. Russell Thomas is somewhat deep too. Like, they're like 90 bigs effective. I would make it a little bigger, not to discourage action, but just to protect my hand. But I think his sizing looks really nutty, so I maybe would 3x it here, just in this spot.
Well, you do have the caller too, which is another factor in there.
Exactly, that's why I would make it like, I want to say like 2.2, something like that, 2.3, whatever. It's not even that big of a difference. It looks super nutty, his sizing, and he's in position, so I don't hate it. Just my preference would be a little bigger.
Right. But then the interesting thing that happens is Sylvia, who is, you know, huge stack at this point, in the cutoff. So he must have been hijacked.
He must have been hijacked.
So Sylvia in the cutoff makes a 4.6. So he makes a huge 4-bet here. And then you're Merson here with the queens. Sylvia makes a 4.6. So before anyone else, you know, acts, what are you thinking here for your Merson? Given Sylvia, who it's worth saying has a super aggro image at this point and is being, you know, pretty much pushing people around given the final table bubble. You still have the other guys to act, but.
I would say that Merson knows that Sylvia knows that Merson could be squeezing here pretty light.
Right.
So I can't imagine Merson not coming back over the top of Sylvia here with queen.
I mean,
it's Sylvia's the chip leader, by the way, if we didn't say that.
Yeah, he is.
That's even more reason to come over the top.
Right.
I can't imagine folding queen to Sylvia here.
Yeah. I mean, if it's Michael Esposito or Stephen G, it's a different story, but it's Sylvia. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you bring up Esposito because I think, actually, now that I look back at this hand, I think Esposito was actually the hijack. And he folded 10-10. No, he was in the blinds.
Yeah.
And he folded 10-10.
Esposito used to play net for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Wait, nobody knows about hockey, Casey. It doesn't exist anymore. Later.
Oh, sorry. There's a few Canadians listening.
Hey. Oh, okay. So Sylvia makes a 4.6. And then but the thing is, Merson, you know, doesn't get to just make that decision because when it gets back to Thomas, the under-the-gun opener, he jams 17 million. So now you're faced with – now this is a 5-bet. And I mean, I think it's worth saying that there is not a lot of light 5-betting at this point of the tournament. And then I don't think from Russell Thomas there was, you know, a lot of light raising. But what do you do now if you're Merson with the queens? Is this an insta-fold or a tough decision?
The important thing to say is that Russell Thomas shifts, but Jacob Balsinger actually flatted here. I think he was under the gun plus one. He flatted ace king, which isn't like a sick spot now. But the important thing is to say, like, I'm shocked he didn't 3-bet here based on the dynamic of the final table. Why not put more pressure? Like, I don't know. Like, he flat pre-flopped.
I mean, you know what? Let's save that to after we find out what Merson does, because I think there is something interesting there, but I don't want to get.
But Merson's after Ballsinger. So Ballsinger right. folds.
We're trying to do the hand through the dynamic of Mercia.
Right. We can talk about Ballsinger in a second. So
remember?
Ballsinger folds, and then it's Merson with the queens.
I mean, it's not a snap fold for sure. But you got to think that Russell Thomas is probably folding jacks here, right? When there's a five bet and it gets back to him and he was under the gun, he's probably folding jacks. So Merson can only think really that Thomas has ace, king, aces, or kings.
Yeah.
So I think I really like the fold here.
I mean, the thing is we don't get to see all the hands, but from what I saw, Russell Thomas wasn't active at all. So it makes it like, I know you say it's not I actually think it's a snap fold. Like, I think he was relatively nitty 18 handed down. I don't think he was doing anything.
Even if it's you, who is a fairly ag person, if you're Russell Thomas sitting in that seat with Jack, and that action's before you, you're folding jacks, right?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I hate knowing the hands, but the only reason why I say I don't know is because I think Greg Merson is the most likely to 3-bet on the table. I think Greg Merson is by far the most likely to 3-bet.
And Sylvie is the most likely to 4-bet.
And he's the most likely to 4-bet, but it's under the gun, so yes, I'm folding jack.
Right.
But
yeah, it's under the gun.
But what you said, Diego, is 100% true. That's the most likely to do. Well, Greg Merson still may be the most likely to 4-bet, but he can't 4-bet here.
Right.
So Jesse.
Given the dynamic that most ag players are folding jacks there, and Russell Thomas is pretty tight, you have to fold queens.
Yeah, you got to fold queens. I think it's definitely. I mean, I don't think I think too much about it, but I'm tighter than Merson and Casey, obviously. Okay, so then let's talk about. So we all agree that the queens. Thomas had aces, so you know.
Yeah, and shows.
Yeah.
Like why?
Yeah, because I mean, aces shoving is obviously the obvious move with aces there, but at least give some mystique. Like, could he have done that with tens or, you know, jacks?
What could he have 5-bet to? What is it? Can you guys figure that out? It's more than what is the exact math on him 5-betting?
Well, it was 1.85 million.
Because, listen, there's an important dynamic here that we haven't even mentioned. Russell Thomas and Jesse Sylvia lived together.
Right.
A year before this in Vegas. They roomed together, like 2+2, I don't really know what. But what could he have 5-bet to?
7.45 million.
That's the smallest?
Yeah.
Yeah, because his raise was 2.8 more.
But 2.6 to start the hand, wow.
Sylvia's raise of Merson is 2.6, so he can make it 7.2 or whatever.
Uh-huh. It's actually not 2.6, 2.55, that's why.
Oh, sorry, math whiz.
I was just saying, you asked what the minimum is. Never mind, later.
I
thought it was 2.7.
Like I said, it probably looks stronger making it that, because I'm all about that. But if he makes it 2.7, say, or whatever you guys said, what was it? Excuse me.
You mean
7.7? Say he makes it 7.7, he has 18 million left. He does allow 6-bet fold equity. But whatever, I don't think that's happening. So I like the shove. I think it's fine.
You know, I think the Ballsinger Case King move is actually very interesting to talk about, because given what happens, there could have been a really interesting spot.
Oh, this pot could have been way bigger. Way bigger. This pot,
well,
no, excuse me.
Well, there's two elements of the Ace King here that I think we're talking about.
This pot should have been way bigger.
Well, first off, if he raises Russell Thomas, you know, he's going to get folds from all weaker aces around the table, and including Russell Thomas. So why raise Ace King here if you're just going to fold everyone out?
Seriously.
Let's talk about that.
Let's take it.
Under the gun opens. You're under the gun plus one with Ace King.
Okay, because you have a premium, and Ace King, given the fact that he has aces, is not the point, but Ace King is way ahead of a new UTG opening range.
UTG is the new button.
Yeah, so you're obviously, like, you have no issues here 3-betting and taking the pot down. So,
no,
I mean,
I have no issue with that, right?
Or you have no issue 3-betting for value because you feel like you have the best hand. This is always a 3-bet for me. It's never flat in the history of poker.
Me too. That's why I brought it up. Me too, 100%. It's also important, like, Russell Thomas is nitty. We just don't get a good image of Russell Thomas because he wasn't at the feature table. But a lot
when
of
I'm
guys.
I'm online and a guy raises and then I see a guy flat and it goes to showdown and the guy who flattered ace king, he snap gets a fish tag.
Right, but.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Especially in this spot. I'd be less likely to 3-bet ace king to an under the gun plus one than an under the gun open. I think under the gun is one of the lightest spots to open, especially.
I don't care where he's opening. Your ace king is always better than any open position opening range.
And Casey, we're not even bringing up. This is the final table bubble, like yeah. where he could 3-bet to 5-bet. Like he's gonna get 4-bet way wider in this spot by like anyone. So, like, ball singer could
right,
3-bet
that's,
here?
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, yeah, that's the interesting thing here, because if Thomas doesn't jam here, like, ball singer should be jamming 100% of the time, given that Merson and then Sylvia raise.
Well, it depends if Russell Thomas flats or not. But let's do the hand this way. Let's say Russell Thomas opens a 750K like he does. Like, that's always going to stay on that way. He's under the gun, 750K. Ball singer makes it 1.9 million, let's just say. Two right. Greg Merson with queens. And Ball Singer has been fairly active. So Merson's going to make it
3.8.
Yeah, 3.84ish, whatever. I mean, it just becomes a sick pot. Jesse Sylvia is actually the one who gets fucked in this spot because he wouldn't have lost 4.6 million.
Yeah.
And I'm with Casey here. Like, I would never flat ace king in this spot. Like, so what? Never. It comes ace high, ace four deuce, and Russell Thomas has a set, and you're paying him off. Like, 3-bet, like, reevaluate.
I mean, in this one particular hand, this flat saves him chips, but I just think you're giving up too much value over the course of tournaments in a lifetime by just flatting ace kings in these spots.
I'm 3-betting to 5-bet in this spot. I'm 3-betting ace
okay,
king.
Okay, yeah, I agree
bet.
With that.
The thing that stands out to me the most is why does, with any hand, why does Sylvia make it 4.6? It just seems really big to me, especially when you have...
Well, it's not actually that big when you consider the fact that there's 750, 750, and 1.8.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Like, it's just a little, you know, it's not overly big. It looks overly big, but he's trying to thin the field quite a bit and not give odds because there's a lot in there. You know, he makes it 3.5 million...
Yeah.
He could get, you know, action where this 4.6 million might take it down if these people are weak.
And to be real, completely honest here, like just looking at the hand from my perspective, I absolutely love Jesse Sylvia's 4-bet here.
Yeah, no, it's a
I'm
great
not even bet. Kidding. Yeah. Like I'm in love
I
with
like it. Too.
I think
it too.
It's such a good spot with a raise and a flat and I think Merson, we can all say he's the most aggressive player at the table.
From everything I've listened to a lot of interviews with these players, and I think they all think Sylvia was the most aggressive. They all think Merson's the best player, but they all think Sylvia is a very good player.
Yeah, but what's the read on Salaburu?
I think Sylvia had most of the chips toward the end. I mean, remember Sylvia started this 18 handed with like 4 million or something, and he just went on a super heater, and like he flopped a set versus top pair flush draw.
No, but I'm just telling you from the pot. I've listened to I think what's his name, Bernard Lee. He interviewed every single one of the players, you know, over the course of the summer.
Yeah,
he has a podcast, and he interviewed every single one of them, and most of them said that Sylvia was the most aggressive player at the table.
Image-wise,
he's the most.
My only point is usually the guy with the most chips is the most aggressive.
Yeah, true,
but I think he
got them through some aggression too.
The thing is, Merson got a lot of play on ESPN, so we got to see a lot of Merson and.
Yeah, but
Sylvia,
Merson didn't act crazy on ESPN. That,
not at
didn't?
All. He played didn't. Super solid.
Yeah,
but
he played solid.
Really active. The fact was is that Sylvia was always handcuffed when we were watching the main event until the final two tables when he got chips. He was
handcuffed.
Yeah, they handcuffed him on the table, Dolph. No, but then he got shifts and he opened up. And yeah, I mean, obviously, if he's four betting 10-5 in a spot that I think is really solid, he's probably the most aggressive. That's why if you heard the commentary after, Merson like started cussing at the table. He's like, I was going to fucking five bet all day. You think I'm scared to fucking five bet? Just like that. They went bleep, bleep, bleep. And I was like, oh, Merson's pissed off.
Yeah, but what did it do?
Bleep, bleep. But yeah, I mean, this is a sick hand. And like Merson makes a really good fold. I think based on the dynamic that Russell Thomas, like, obviously he's more of a nit when he shows aces. Like, why not show here and like look all sick? Like, set up a sick image. Like, why would you show? But like I said, Russell Thomas is friends with Sylvia, so
yeah, maybe he really needs to not be showing there.
Okay, Casey's at the table and I'm there, I'm going to hopefully show him a three.
Yeah.
Is Russell Thomas the one that's doing the little training
session
with Jason Somerville?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. That's him.
Wait, he's signing up at Tournament Poker Ed?
No, he has Somerville has brought in like 10 pros. Well, I guess 8 other pros or 7 other pros to basically run final table simulations for like 2 months with Thomas. Thomas hired him.
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could do the same thing.
Well, what do you guys – right on. I can't wait for the coverage. What is the time? Start at 5 – what time does it start, Derek? 5 o'clock on
That's a really good question.
Yeah, I think they start
– I don't know.
They start at 5 p.m. Las Vegas time, so 8 p.m. Eastern.
Gotcha.
And it's going to go pretty late that day.
Yeah, I remember going very late.
Yeah.
Last time around, 4 in the morning or something like that. So
they're playing down to three-handed or four-handed, depending on – because they're so deep that they're not they think it's going to go so late that they're making the concession that they might have to stop it at four-handed.
Right.
And then finish it up the next day.
It'll be fun.
There's such an edge, too, in these final nine. Like, I feel like there's two amateurs, and I'm not – they're the older guys. Like, not just to say that, but I feel like the two older guys are the weakest, and then it's like – a bunch of like really fucking competent players. I'm pumped.
Yeah, it's going to be a good table.
It might be one of the better final tables in a while. Yeah.
No, I agree.
There's not as many. You know, there's no names that like the average player would know as there has been the last couple of years. But from player perspective, it's for you know serious player, serious fan, it's one of the best final tables we've had.
Oh, it's like the best final table to sweat ever. I'm pumped. I can't wait. I will be betting it on Bovada. But I don't.
Who are you taking, Merson?
I'm going to probably. I usually take two or three guys. I'm definitely taking Merson. I'll probably take Salaburu. But I'm definitely taking
Karok and I.
Who?
Karok and I.
Oh, man. I'm out of spite. I'll never take him because he should. I mean, don't even bring that up. That old hand drives me nuts, man. Like, I should have been out for like 20K, 10K profit, and instead he's like about to be a millionaire on an error that the World Series made. It's sad.
Crock night though.
I just can't wait to grind tonight because KB and I will be playing horse 1 cent, 2 cent.
It's gonna be painful.
We should let all the TPE members know that a lot of us are going to a circuit event in Atlantic City at the end of November.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we actually we talked about that in the first segment.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Oh,
we'll talk about it more. No, the segment before you guys joined, we talked about it. But yeah.
Yeah, so I'm saying, one that we didn't get included in.
Yeah, the one before we, you know, we have to have a real session. We have to have a real segment before you guys come on.
Oh, a real segment.
Yeah. That's why everybody hits the podcast and then skips forward till the big dog and Mark comes on.
Oh, we did about 17 hours before we brought you guys on, so.
Yeah. We actually covered 7 hands.
You guys want the people to do, you know, 16, 17-hour nap before they actually start.
Get rested for the hands, so we're going to talk for a little while.
What kind of coverage are we going to do for the Dubstop? I mean, we haven't even talked about this, so I'm glad I'm bringing it up. Are we doing anything?
Yeah, I'm going actually to the Penn & Teller Theater to cover it live.
What are you doing?
No, I know you are, Casey. Congratulations.
Mark, we're parachuting you in to the final table.
Yeah, we're actually using one of those little army guy parachutes that we got out of the Cracker Jack box.
There's a height limit, you fucks.
And Mark actually paid Merson a lot of money to just stand in his cup holder later.
That was great.
That was really good.
Don't die in a grease fire, but that was great.
No, we'll be talking about the hands on the next podcast, too. Just like this one here.
Yep.
Good time.
Well, cool. Well, we actually had some other hands that we thought about discussing, but we got so in-depth into these WSOP hands that we've run out of time. So we'll have to get to those next time around.
Later.
In the meantime, Mark, Casey, thank you as always for joining us.
Oh, Giants, baby! Giants!
Later.
Tigers, one time.
Bears?
Bears.
Cool. So, yeah, thank you, guys, and we'll take a quick break,
thanks,
and then we will come back
for the
and wrap
important
things up
closing
here.
Section.
The important closing section.
And I don't get to be part of the intro or conclusion. We're just nothing, apparently.
We're just fodder.
You're just fodder. So we'll come back, and we'll wrap things up here on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
Peace.
Welcome back, everybody, to the TPE Podcast. Once again, thanks to Mark and Casey for joining us for our strategy talk today. We had hoped to get into a couple other hands, but frankly, we got so passionate about the WSOP hands that we went on and on.
Yeah.
So, but that's what's kind of fun about doing these things is we never really know where they're going.
Yeah, and what's cool about it, too, is that you can watch the hands on TV, and if you've watched them, again, some flavor to what you watched, and if you haven't watched them yet, you can think about some of that stuff as you're watching it for the first time.
Yeah, and we do have we have links to some of these hands, so we'll post those so that people can find the details in case they were lost about what we were talking about. But now there's some Poker News recaps of a couple of those hands,
yep.
So we'll make sure to get those up there for you guys. But either way, it was fun, an impassioned debate on some of them.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, because what I struggle with a little bit there. What the way we talked, you know, what the final, I guess, decisions we had on the hands is that the lines that they took were really high variance, and I'm getting nittier and I'm reducing my variance in final two tables, as we talked about before the pros came on, and so the old me was like, you know, would have been screaming jam here, jam there, jam this, jam that, but the new me is kind of taking a more conservative approach with my stack, and you know, I struggle with that a little bit. I struggle with the advice a little bit. I was a little counter on some of those things. I probably would have, you know, seen a street, and they hated, you know, just flatting the flop with Hilly's hand, you know. But after we talked about it, I actually agreed with them, given that equity that 10-7 has in that spot.
Right.
You know, with the ace king, they disagreed with, you know, they automatically wanted to 3-bet. And, you know, I'm wondering about given, and I'm, with 380 people left in a PokerStars tournament that pays 255, you know, it's a no-brainer, right? But
right.
In this spot, I'm wondering if, you know, if the value of our stack is more important than, you know, creating a high variance play there.
Yeah, I guess – maybe it's too simplistic, but my only thought with the 7-10 hand in particular was if that's not the flop to get all your chips in on, then don't flat 7-10.
Yeah, you're right. you're right, and thinking about it a little further and seeing how connected it is and what our equity is, I agree. But I guess I'm just starting to default to a more variance, reducing lines lately.
Right. And one of the things we were talking about, too, before we got to recording was that you just don't know a lot of what was happening at the tables at those points. So we don't, you know, you have some idea of table dynamics because you know, like, well, this guy seems pretty aggro and this guy seems, or this girl maybe seems pretty tight or, you know, but we don't know what happened to 20 hands right before it. And we also don't know what it's like to be, at least I don't, to be playing on like the eighth day of a tournament where you're exhausted and you're not, you know, you're not always thinking perfectly clear.
Right.
Things like that. So, but I hear what you're saying and I just wonder. And I think I'm probably playing kind of similar because you and I have talked a lot lately about how you have to, how we've changed our styles to sort of fit the merge tournaments and the lock tournaments. So I guess my only question is I think we both agree that that more conservative, lower variance style is very appropriate for those tournaments. The question is, are we adjusting our style in a way that's completely inappropriate for every other tournament?
No, that's a really good point, and that's what that conversation is making me wonder is, you know, I have to be careful. The thing is the merge structures and the style from merge, I think actually is good for general live play. Like, you know, we were talking the WSOP circuit that's coming up. I think you could probably take a very similar approach or just any nightly in, you know, whatever, you know, small casino, you know, that you may go to with a shallow structure. I think merge tournaments are actually fantastic training grounds for typical live, 50 big blind average deep World Series of Poker main event is a unique beast. But for most live tournaments, I think the merge structure is actually a pretty good training ground. And I do think that of less, you know, a lower variance line is more appropriate there. But we got to be careful not to then translate it, you know. When hopefully poker gets back here in the States, we're going to have to, you know, readjust to, you know, different structures, assuming that, you know, we have better structures.
Yeah, because I definitely agree that it's appropriate for lock and merge. I just wonder if Stars opened up today and we played that exact same style, would be like, oh, shit, we're a year and a half behind the time.
No, I think I would play really low stakes just to, like, get myself acquainted with the structures again. But I think that would be appropriate. Yeah. That's what you should
do. Well, hopefully we get to find out really soon.
Yeah, well, if, you know, it's coming up on – we didn't really cover this at all, but it is we're coming up on a – I won't call it a do-or-die time for regulation, but, you know, after the U.S. presidential election, it will be the lame duck session of Congress. There is a bill ready to go. Kyle Reed. You can go to 2+2 legislation form. There's a lot of details around it. There is a bill ready to go. The question is, will it get attached to a must-pass regulation and make it into a bill for voting?
Right.
And this bill, you know, we won't get into the details because we're not really a regulation show, but and I'm by no means a lawyer or any qualified to comment, but most of the people on 2+2 that frequent the regulation form think it's the best bill we've had so far. There is a waiting period, but there are no player penalties. The tax rates seem to be reasonable. For the most part, they think it's the best bill we've gotten so far. There are still some things that, you know, are issues that some people have issues with. It's not perfect, but we're coming up on a time where if there is going to be regulation, you know, this is probably the best shot at regulation we've had so far and will have for a while. Otherwise, if this doesn't work, we're probably going to go state by state. And I do think state by state, but that's going to take a long time before everyone has it, you know, and there never will be full coverage across the U.S. if we go state by state.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm with you. Like, obviously some sort of national option is the best case scenario. If that doesn't happen, I'm sure state by state's going to happen. My concern is that I live in the South.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if it goes state by state, we'll be like the 45th state or something.
It'll take years before there's enough coverage, and there'll still never be coverage in a lot of states. And even in the states that are covered, it's going to take a while before they, you know, they connect themselves like the lottery has connected.
Right.
So state by state is the fallback, and it'll be better than nothing. But federal legislation, I do think, is the best, you know, best case for poker players, even though it's not, you know, it's not going to be like Stars and FTP running, you know, in 2008. But it's better than what we have today, and it's for the foreseeable future. It's the best case scenario for the next. So hopefully it comes. Anyway.
Yep. Yeah. So keep your fingers crossed. I am not nearly as in tuned to the PPA and all the legislative stuff as I probably should be, but I'm sure on their site they have a list of people you should be voting for if you're if your main concern is poker legislation. So I'm not, you know, not up to us to tell you who to vote for, but if that is your big concern, I suggest checking out the PPA's website and find out who in your state or wherever that you should be voting for to help get this stuff passed. Go find out who they are and cast a vote, because it is definitely, as you probably realized, about election time. So so that's about as political as you're ever going to hear us get on this show. So take that for what it's worth and go out and vote. Let's go over what's happening at TPE, and then we'll wrap things up.
Yeah, it's been some cool stuff going on lately. We have... two of my favorite video producers, Daryl Jace and Danny N13, have series running right now, actively, which is great. And they're both hand history reviews. Daryl does a 215 buy-in review, and Danny is doing a W Coop deep run. He made a deep run on one of the W Coops. And so they both, I think Danny's really versatile and good at live sweats and hand history reviews, but I know Daryl's really excels in hand history reviews, so that's running right now. And next up, we got video from Casey, and Jamie Kerstetter will be making her debut.
Nice. So, looking forward to her vid.
Yep, absolutely. So it's a lot of good videos being pumped out right now. And so, you know, go check them out.
Nice. Also, cool little article went up today, actually, from Chris Moon, Moves Like Darvin, talking about some ideas around using Sharkscope for tournament players and checking out, you know, people you may have played with in the past and things like that. So go check that article out as well. It's a good little piece. I like his writing.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, yeah. He's super in-depth and gives you a lot to think about, everything he writes about.
Also, for you guys who are heavy into the forums over at TPE, make sure you check out the greatest movie of all time thread, because they're getting down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, wow.
I've been actively voting. It's been really fun to see the whole process go, but I think we're down to 64
wow.
or something like that from the 250 or something that we started with. So
I can't believe they did so many, so many.
I know.
Movies. Wow.
It was a pretty big commitment from the guy running it, U-Stars, I think is his name. Yeah, so thank you to him for keeping it going. But it's been a lot of fun. So just a little off-topic action over there in the forum. So make sure you go check that out too.
Definitely. Cool.
Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Once again, thanks to Mark and Casey for joining us, and thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you here next time on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
See ya.
In Texas, please fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Lock in intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I've got. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I've got. Can't read her mouth, hold the face. She's got to
Randall Campbell is fun when you're with me.
I love it.
Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's loving, it's not rough, it isn't fun.